Oddity News.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the latest edition of the Oddity News. I am Dave Wirtz, your ever-persistent reporter. And with me today is my co-host, of course, Moby Dick, also known as PC Tunney.
Not ever Moby Dick. Other just Dick or, you know, Dickhead. Big Dick.
Well, at least I added the B. Last thing you want is just to be Mo Dick.
Mo Dick. Hey, Mo. Hey, Mo Dick. Come over here. MODOK? MODOK?
Oh, God. Please don't bring up MODOK ever again.
He is a Mo Dick, isn't he?
All right. Well, welcome to the Oddity News and the Oddity News Network, where we give you the ridiculous, weird, and wacky news from this past week, keeping it upbeat, hopefully, and not bogging you down in politics and other nonsense that, good Lord, you know we've got too much of that. So let's get right into the stories. And, Tony, I'm sure you've heard this one. If you didn't, I am surprise, but scientists have made a see-through mouse using food dye and Doritos. A common food dye can turn the skin of living mice transparent, but we don't know yet if it will work on humans. That common food dye turning those mice transparent enabled researchers to peer inside the body without surgery of the mouse. This is the first time scientists have used the technique to visualize the tissues of living mice under the microscope. They used a food-safe dye, which can likely be found in snacks in your pantry, and several fundamental physics principles to render the mice see-through. Biological tissue is chock full of stuff, from proteins to fats and liquids, and each substance differs in its ability to blend or refract light that it hits. This property is referred to as a material's refractive index. If light particles hit a boundary between two materials with different refractive indices, both those particles are forced to change direction or scatter. While light can easily pass straight through these transparent materials like a glass of water, opaque materials get in the light's way, sending it bouncing in many directions. Well, that's where the food-safe dye comes in. Scientists have discovered a simple trick to change the skin's transparency. They took a concentrated food dye that is great at absorbing light, dissolved it in water, and then applied the solution to the skin, which balanced out the refractive indices of substances within that tissue, making it temporarily translucent. The researchers described this approach in a new study published on September 5th in the Journal of Science. They tested the technique on rodents using a U.S. Food and Drug Administration certified color additive called tartrazine, also known as yellow number 5. This yellow-orange dye is often added to foods such as desserts and candies, as well as drinks, drugs, and cosmetics. One most likely that you would know is Doritos. After initial experiments showed that tartrazine could turn slices of chicken breast transparent, the team turned to lab mice. They rubbed a tartrazine solution onto the rodent's scalps and then observed the animals under a microscope. It takes a few minutes for the transparency to appear, study lead author Xiao Oh, an assistant professor of physics at the University of Texas at Dallas, said in a statement. It's similar to the way a facial cream or mask works. The time needed depends on how fast the molecules diffuse into the skin. Does this change your opinion on Doritos, Tony?
I'm a cool ranch guy, so I like Doritos. I heard this, that they're trying to use this to make it work for humans, to be less invasive, to find cancerous tumors and things of that nature. But yeah, good for them. I mean, it'd be really weird if you got a hold of it and rubbed it on your hand and you could just, like, see all the workings inside you or something. You'd probably freak the fuck out.
Yeah, I love that they kept it very simple. Just like, oh, this yellow dye and water. Oh, I think there's more than that, but you know, I'm glad that you're not telling everyone how to go and be translucent.
I think this is also in Mountain Dew. Wasn't there a thing about it being in Mountain Dew back in the day? Anyway.
I thought that was an urban myth.
Is it? I don't know. We'd have to contact the Mountain Dewers.
Oh, PepsiCo. Gotcha.
PepsiCo. Well, hey, you got a Doritos story? I want to let you know just one bag of Cheetos can be world-changing. A parkour at Carlsbad Caverns National Park in New Mexico recently dropped a full bag of Cheetos at the caverns. That one bag of the dusty orange snack made a huge impact on the cave's ecosystem, the park said in a Facebook post. At the scale of human perspective, a spilled snack bag may seem trivial, but to the life of the cave, it can be world-changing. The post explained how some incidental impacts can be difficult or impossible to prevent, such as the fact that people walk among the caves on a regular basis, leaving a fine trail of lint, but other impacts are completely avoidable, such as dropping a bag of snacks. To the owner of the snack bag, the impact is likely incidental, but to the ecosystem of the cave, it had a huge impact. The processed corn, softened by the humidity of the cave, formed the perfect environment to host microbial life and fungi. Cave crickets, mites, spiders, and flies soon organize into a temporary food web, dispersing the nutrients to the surrounding cave and formations. Molds spread higher up the nearby surfaces, fruit, die, and stink, and the cycle continues. Park rangers reportedly spent 20 minutes removing the foreign debris and molds from the surface of the cave, explaining that while some members of the ecosystem that came from the Cheetos are cave dwellers, many of the microbial life and molds are not. Great or small, we all leave an impact wherever we go. Let us all leave the world a better place than we found it, the post concluded. The park's website states that food and drink are prohibited in the cavern except for plain water, as it attracts animals into the caverns not usually frequented by wildlife. Have you ever seen any of these studies, though, where, like, a squirrel or a chipmunk or something like that, they get a taste for these processed foods with high, you know, bursts of flavor, and they just go nuts for it. They're like it's like crack to them, almost like when humans get addicted to drugs.
I mean, one of the first things when I moved out to the River West area here in Milwaukee, the first day I moved in, I was like unpacking, and I took like a bag of garbage outside, and I opened up the garbage can, I tossed the garbage in, and I put it down, and what I did, I looked down the like row of garbages, and there was a squirrel with a chicken bone just like gnawing at it, like a fried chicken leg, and it was one of the most intimidating things I had ever seen in my life, because that squirrel was so stoked to eat this damn thing.
Yeah, animals can be hilarious.
Well, how do you feel about Venezuela?
I have no qualms with Venezuela.
Well, Venezuela has been gripped by protests over July's contested presidential election, which saw Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro be reelected for a third term despite global skepticism over the results. But despite the arrests of thousands of his critics, the former bus driver turned politician seems to have been focusing on something else entirely: Christmas. It's September, and it already smells like Christmas, the 61-year-old quoted on Monday night during his weekly television show. That's why this year, as a way of paying tribute to you all and in gratitude to you all, I am going to decree early Christmas for October 1st. The Venezuelan Episcopal Conference on Tuesday criticized the announcement as they warned the holiday is, quote, not to be used for political or propaganda goals. They added in a statement that Christmas starts on the 25th of December, CNN reported. Speaking from Caracas, Venezuela's capital, Jose Ernesto Ruiz, a 57-year-old office worker, said, quote, Christmas is supposed to be a time of joy, family reunions, parties, and presents. But without money and with this political crisis, who can believe that there will be an early Christmas? Donnie, you ready to celebrate?
So this is Christmas.
October 1st.
It's come much too early. Your bubble has burst. We say this every year,
don't we? Don't we always say that the music starts way too soon?
Oh,
and
dear.
Like people get all into the Christmas spirit way too early. Now we have to get ready potentially for an October 1st. Because I'm just saying, we do have an election coming up. I don't know what everyone is doing out there, and to be frank, that is your choice, your opinion. But who's to say that couldn't happen here in America?
No, that doesn't mean anything. It doesn't. Just it's an empty kind of statement and proclamation. It means nothing. It's just I got qualms with Venezuela now. Apparently, thanks, ASAP.
But. I do love the approach, Maduro. Way to go. Trying to be like, no, you know what? Early Christmas, people. Good luck trying to get people off. Also, like the other guy said, how do you plan? It's like a month, less than a month away.
We have quite the synergistic back and forth going here. You say Doritos, I say Cheetos. You give me a world political leader, I give you New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu saves choking contestant during lobster roll eating contest. The New Hampshire governor jumped into action on Sunday to save a man who began choking during a lobster roll eating contest. Sununu was attending the Hampton Beach lobster roll eating competition in Hampton, New Hampshire, when one contestant on the end of the stage began pounding his chest as he consumed the famed New England delicacy. The gentleman at the far end, who I was kind of watching, I glanced over, I could tell very quickly, he took a pause. He was having trouble getting something down, Sununu told WMUR-TV. The contestant, Christian Moreno, told the station that the governor was the first person to notice he was choking. My counter came up to me and, like, made a joke and was like, oh, like, I bet nobody else can say that they've gotten the Heimlich from the governor before. And I looked at him, was just like, that was the governor? Moreno told us. The Republican governor said jumping in to help as the contestant was ongoing was wild in itself, and added that what happened after clearing Moreno's windpipe was even more surprising. He went right back to the contest, which I couldn't believe. He ate another 7 lobster rolls after that, Sununu told the outlet, right down to the gullet. Moreno said he plans to return to the contest next year for redemption.
Yeah, come on back. Let's go. This is a mini story to jump off of this. Do you see that your Michigan guy? Your Michigan swimmer tried to go again and then quit again?
I seen that. Yes, I did. I was like, we've talked about this guy enough already.
We said he was going to do it again, damn it.
We thought it'd be next year. He tried again this year.
He tried it like a month later, not even.
The shark might be retired, I think.
Oh, good times. But, I mean... How many lobster rolls do you think you can eat?
In what, 20 minutes or whatever it is? I don't know. Now I'm not interested in it. Back in the day, we used to do like cheeseburger eating contests at McDonald's and shit like that. Like I was pretty good at downing a lot of shit, but I more worry about like the process that comes afterwards of either regurgitating them or having this giant ball of shit in your stomach that's going to make its way out in some explosive form of diarrhea, likely.
Hey, you can do it.
I don't want to.
Oh, God. Well, this is a great time to kick it over to our sponsors and shout out the people that put the Oddity News Network on the airwaves.
Yeah, folks, head on over to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. Pick yourself up a chair shot t-shirt. Doesn't even have to be a t-shirt. You can get it a tank top, long sleeves, or a hoodie. Get it in soft style. Your epidermis will thank you. That's prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. It makes a great gift as well. And don't forget about thechairshot.com. sports entertainment and sports entertainment. We got you covered on all fronts and tons of wrestling coverage. If you watch it, we got your coverage right there on thechairshot.com. And of course, you're already listening to Chairshot Radio Network on thechairshot.com and all of your favorite streaming platforms.
Why should you visit thechairshot.com? Thechairshot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
A suspect at a Walmart in Bushnell was arrested the other day as Stephen Michael Hanlon, 45, who lives in the Blueberry Hill RV park in Bushnell, is facing four counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon as Hanlon was arrested for this aggravated assault while dressed as a pirate and armed with two knives standing outside of a Walmart. Oh, God. This incident occurred Saturday afternoon, according to an arrest report from the Sumter County Sheriff's Office. The group of children ranging in age from 14 to 12 were walking in the parking lot when Hanlon swerved toward them and threw down his bicycle. He pulled a knife and began running at the children, who also lived at the Blueberry Hill RV park. An adult driving a car saw what was happening, stopped and yelled at Hanlon. Law enforcement was called, and the caller described Hanlon describing to a dispatcher saying, quote, "He looks like a pirate." A deputy who was familiar with Hanlon found him in a nearby McDonald's parking lot. Hanlon was in possession of two knives in his, quote, makeshift overall suspenders. When the children were interviewed by deputies, one of the children said his friend had called Hanlon quite an egregious word, which apparently enraged him. Criminal history check revealed that Hanlon was convicted in 1999 of false imprisonment and battery in Georgia. He was taken to custody and booked at the Sumter County Detention Center. All right, people at Walmart, Tony, what's the weirdest one you've ever seen?
Oh, I try to, push that out of my brain. It's just, it depends on what time of day you go, honestly. I think as you know, if you're, that 8 a.m. to, 6 p.m. range, you're pretty good. But the closer you get to the nighttime, it can get scary. I don't really have a specific. How about you?
I think the weirdest thing I've ever seen was a man in a full bunny suit.
Oh, okay. Was it Halloween?
I did not take a picture. I should have, but, that's my own fault. What would happen? What would you do if you saw a man running at you in a full pirate outfit though?
Parlay. No.
Booty.
Oh, yeah, there you go. See, you jumped in on it. All right. Dining with Disaster, Aesop. Disclaimer. Aesop, Dave. Sorry, folks. It's a force of habit. Disclaimer. While this story is locked and loaded with facts, it may contain some explosive satire. When we think of kitchen mishaps, most of us imagine charred toast or a spaghetti sauce explosion. But in Chesterfield, Virginia, a culinary catastrophe unexpectedly turned into a violent shootout that absolutely no one saw coming. Local firefighters recently responded to a call for what they thought was a typical kitchen fire, allegedly beginning on the stove. What they stumbled upon instead was a hot oven filled with an unexpected ingredient, a loaded handgun. Talk about dinner to die for. Here's how it all went down. Apparently, someone in the residence was looking for a genius place to store their loaded handgun and idiotically settled on the oven. Hey, who needs a gun cabinet when you can have a literal box of fire that also makes frozen pizza? Unfortunately for the homeowners and the oven, someone in the house inadvertently turned on the oven, not realizing the gun was inside. Did I mention that it was loaded? Well, you can guess what happened next. As the oven's temperature climbed into the triple digits, the gun's temperature got hotter than Satan with a sunburn. Soon enough, the oven turned into a mini shooting range with bullets popping off like popcorn. The overheated gun caused 5 rounds to fire from the appliance, according to WWBT. Firefighters bravely opened the oven to find the gun sizzling, which left which, let's face it, is a far cry from your usual batch of cookies. Authorities are still scratching their heads over how someone could think an oven would be a responsible place to store a gun. But one thing's clear. If you're ever tempted to multitask cooking and shooting, maybe stick to the recipe and leave the gunplay to the pros. Thankfully, this story has a happy ending and no one was injured in the blast. In the end, Chesterfield's brave firefighters are grateful for their safe return from this heated situation. Charges are not being filed against the gun owners, but they have assured authorities they will look into safer gun storage alternatives, like the freezer. If you're a gun owner, consider this reminder to lock up your weapons in a secure locked location. Keep yourself, your neighbor, and your kitchen appliances safe. Remember, folks, the only thing that should be heating up in your oven is that casserole your family hates, not your arsenal. Quite the, like this person really has, like, the zest and, you know, mission statement of the oddity woven into their writing there. That was everything by Missy Baker. Well written, Missy Baker from Culture.
Yeah, I love it. That was, you know what, that has to be quite the scare there. Just like bang bang.
Yeah, I mean, out of nowhere, you know.
I'm sure they make a bomb casserole though.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get packs of juicy red, green, black, or tri-color variety seedless grapes for $3.99 each. Then get tender boneless chuck roast or steaks for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, everyone, this does bring us to our mid segment this episode, and what appropriate timing. But let's go to another one-star review, this time of the wildly anticipated and excited Beetlejuice review. This is by Adam Graham of the Detroit News, film critic, and let me tell you, he doesn't hold back. The juice is loose in Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, and so is everything else in this sloppy legacy sequel to 1988's Beetlejuice that really could benefit from some tightening of its screws. Beetlejuice is both overstuffed and undercooked, an unfocused mishmash of callbacks to the original and new threads that quickly unravel. It lacks the wit, heart, and zany madcap energy of its predecessor, and it mostly stumbles around coasting on fumes. In short, it's deadly. It's, of course, cliche to say they don't make them like they used to, but Beetlejuice was special even for its time. A truly original, funny, and empathetic look of death through the lens of a recently deceased couple, played by Alec Baldwin and Geeta Davis, trying to hold on to their dignity as they make their way through the afterlife. It also featured a gonzo performance from Michael Keaton as bio-exorcist Beetlejuice, who was such a live wire that he stole the movie and became a pop culture icon despite having less than 20 minutes of screen time. Beetlejuice has had quite an afterlife itself and remains a generational touchstone because of its ghoulish comedic frights, director Tim Burton's singular sense of world building, and its compassionate touch, which makes all of its other elements sing with the ease and grace of Harry Belafonte. Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice is, by comparison, clumsy and wrong-footed and never establishes a grasp on its reason for being, past cashing in on the goodwill of its namesake. Now 36 years later, for reference, the same amount of time which elapsed between Top Gun and its 2022 sequel, Keaton is back as the titular ghost with the most, as are principal cast members Winona Ryder as goth teen turned paranormal TV host Lydia Deetz, and Catherine O'Hara as Lydia's trashy art world stepmother Delia. As for Jeffrey Jones, who played Lydia's father and is now on a list, His character first appears in a claymation sequence and is then the victim of a shark attack, who is rendered headless and is missing the top half of his upper torso. A lot of work for a character who could have simply been written off like those of Baldwin and Davis. Joining the fray are Jenna Ortega as Lydia's angsty teenage daughter Astrid, Justin Theroux as Lydia's opportunistic and Weasley boyfriend Rory, Willem Dafoe as B-movie actor turned ghost cop Wolf Jackson, and Monica Bellucci as Dolores, the leader of a soul-sucking death cult who is also the vengeful and reanimated ex-wife of Beetlejuice. There's also Arthur Conti as Astrid's love interest Jeremy, and Bob, the shrunken head atop a normal framed body memorably camped out in death's waiting room. It's multiplied into an army of subservience to Beetlejuice, or something like that. If it sounds overly busy, well, it is, and it never finds a steady rhythm to settle into. Tonally, Lydia now exists on a different planet from her original character, who would have a wholesale rejected the very notion of being a TV host. It could be a sly commentary on Gen X growing up and selling out, but the script by Alfred Goh and Miles Miller doesn't seem that pointed. Bellucci's Dolores is introduced like she's going to be the story's big baddie, but then spends most of her screen time wandering an office hallway looking for her ex. And Defoe's character seems like a holdover from an earlier version of the script that actually gave him something to do. The extended Soul Train sequence, alas, is best left ignored. Keaton's Beetlejuice, meanwhile, has a moment or two of inspired lunacy. There's a bit where he spills his guts quite literally onto the floor, but then keeps arriving to the shoehorn the script from the dead ends in its story, which overtaxes his presence, and Keaton's performance lacks the unpredictable insanity of his first go-around as Beetlejuice, which solidified the actor as a maniac presence and a guy you always had to keep your eye on. And this time around, unfortunately, his one-liners inspire groans instead of guffaws. Legacy sequels from Ghostbusters Afterlife to Beverly Hills Cops Axel S. F exists to shake the tree and see if there's still any fruit left on them. Usually there's not, but sometimes new territory is there to explore. There's a good reason to get the band back together one more time to play the hits. For Burton, this return is also a way to get some of his mojo back after losing his way in the Hollywood wilderness over the last few decades. But Beetlejuice only proves how much of a unicorn the first film was, pairing the right filmmaker at the right time with the right cast and the right material. Beetlejuice, by comparison, is dead on arrival.
Okay.
Tony, I know that you went and saw this.
I did. I saw it Sunday morning.
And you were waiting to share your opinion. I will say I did get the sense initially that you had some strong feelings in maybe the negative or maybe like a milk toast sort of way, but I could be wrong.
So I went Sunday morning, saw it in ScreenX, and when I went to buy tickets a week earlier, I had said in the Bandwagon Nerds chat that we have, because I always am the one buying the movie tickets, and I don't mind. I like to sit where I want to sit, get the right time, get the rewards points. So all these Marvel movies that I'm going to see and everything else, it had more tickets sold than the previous Marvel movies that I've gone to see outside of Deadpool and Wolverine, and then all the way back to maybe like No Way Home. But in between those two, this just had more tickets already gone. You could see it. And a 10 a.m. showing on a Sunday had like 50 people. This movie made over $100 million this weekend. So Beetlejuice is one of my favorite holiday movies and one of my favorite movies ever. I watch it every year for Halloween. And now I have two movies to watch. This was everything the first one was. It captured the essence of Beetlejuice. It captured the essence of the town. The model scale was up in the attic. They're selling the house. Lydia has moved on. Her character has grown into an adult. She's not going to be the same person she was when she was 16. Catherine O'Hara as Delia, like, I wouldn't be surprised if she got nominated for Best Supporting Actress. This movie, for its art, should get nominated as well. And Tim Burton was right when he said he had to have the right story to tell, and he found the right story to tell, because this story is about Delia, Lydia, and her daughter, played by Jenna Ortega, Astrid. It's about their relationship. And the way that they got rid of, what's his name?
Jeffrey Jones.
Yeah, so his character was in the movie, but how he died was... Do you mind if I ruin it for you, or do you not want me to?
Oh, I said it earlier.
Okay, so you already know, like a shark attack, right?
Yeah, the claymation.
Right.
That was in the review.
So there was no. I kind of heard that. There was no face. There was just his body. So you didn't see, like, so they didn't have to write him out. It was kind of funny, actually. But a lot of what they did was super clever. Justin Theroux is the perfect foil. So I would highly encourage everybody to go take your kids. There was plenty of kids there as well that enjoyed the movie. It's very family friendly. Like, the gore of Beetlejuice and the scary stuff is not too much for a kid. But honestly, if someone who loved that movie...
No, and you know, this is obviously... I do search for one-star reviews.
Right. No.
Because the tomato meter right now is 82 for the fans and 77 for the critics. So it is certified fresh, people. But again, I seek these out because I do find them funny. And clearly, when you give the rating of a D+ or lower, you hate this damn movie for whatever reason.
No, this was an A. This was definitely an A, an easy A. Kudos to Tim Burton. Kudos to the cast. Kudos to everybody that was involved in the art direction. It was beautiful. And if you can go see it in a ScreenX format, do it, because it does enhance the visuals parts of the movie. And they do it at certain times, like going through the city by using a drone, or going into the model and making it lifelike and things like that. So, yeah, I couldn't endorse it any higher.
All right, well, I'll take your word for it, and I'll see it eventually. I definitely can't avoid that. So, yeah. All right. Well, thank you. That's your review of Beetlejuice from one PC Tunney. Tunney, do you have one more story, I hear?
I do, and you're not going to believe the title. Medieval nun faked her own death to escape convent and pursue carnal lust. Joan of Leeds created a makeshift dummy to throw Archbishop Melton off track. She then fled to a town 30 miles away and was never seen again. Committing to the lifelong pursuit of being a nun and living in a convent is one of that requires extreme commitment, particularly in the 14th century. For Joan of Leeds, a rather rebellious English nun at St. Clement's Nunnery in York, a change in pursuit required extreme measures, namely escape. Archivists at the University of York recently uncovered Joan's fascinating backstory while translating and digitizing 16 registers of York's archbishops used to document current events between 1304 and 1305. What they found was a tale of intrigue and admirable cunning, as Joan faked her own death by creating a dummy in the likeness of her body and placing it among actual corpses before running away. Changing one's mind about life in a nunnery was a substantial faux pas at the time, due to both the gravity of the religious commitments being broken, as well as the limited agency women experienced in medieval times. York's religious leaders were highly displeased at her actions. She now wanders at large, this is a quote, she now wanders at large to notorious peril to her soul and to the scandal of all her order, wrote Archbishop York William Melton in a record book dated 1318. From the surface evidence alone, detailing Joan using a dummy, burying it in a place that would strongly point to her being dead, escaping the convent's strictures was clearly a priority that outweighed any potential consequences of retribution. I haven't seen strictures in a while. Maybe it was supposed to be structures. A note in the register explained that she impudently cast aside the propriety of religion and the modesty of her sex by faking her death in a cunning, nefarious manner, which had her simulate a body illness where she pretended to be dead before placing her makeshift lookalike in a sacred place among real dead members of her religious order. After successfully fooling her Benedictine sisters into burying the dummy, Joan fled St. Clement's and traveled around 30 miles to reach the town of Beverly. When Archbishop Melton discovered what she had done, he commanded a subordinate to retrieve her. Having turned her back on decency and the good of the religion, seduced by indecency, she involved herself irreverently and perverted her path of life arrogantly to the way of carnal lust and away from poverty and obedience, wrote Melton. It's entirely unclear if Melton's church officials ever located Joan, if she was to create a new life for herself, or whether she even returned to the convent on her own volition. What is fairly well established, however, is that the long-term career choices for women at the were essentially regulated to serving at a nunnery or participating in arranged marriage or working for a living, usually in agriculture or crafts. So, not fun reading.
Hey, man,
13th century.
Don't
14th
don't
century
knock
vernacular.
Until you try it, man. That's all. That's what this woman's saying, and good for her getting her carnal lust on.
Yeah.
And just so you know, stricture is a word.
Okay.
So you're good.
Okay. Strictures. Learn something new every day.
Yeah. Basically, like following the rules, the list of rules. So they. I'm sure nuns have strictures.
All right.
Clearly. Yeah, so, now know. But that
and
is
knowing is half the battle.
Yeah, might as well keep the wavelength. Might as well keep the wavelength going because a Lakeland woman allegedly attacks boyfriend who declined phone sex.
Oh boy.
A Lakeland woman has been arrested in an alleged attack on her boyfriend who declined her request for phone sex.
Dumbass.
The boyfriend ran to a neighbor's home and urged the neighbor to call 911 after the attack on August 6th by 37-year-old Christina Alexandra Pearsall. According to an arrest report by the Lakeland Police Department, the boyfriend said that Pearsall had arrived home and punched him in the mouth with a closed fist, then drove away immediately. He was still in the home when Pearsall's 17-year-old daughter heard him ask, "Why is she being such a bitch?" The daughter then texted Pearsall and told her about the boyfriend's comment, prompting an angry Pearsall to return home, started screaming and hitting her boyfriend even more, and then the boyfriend fled the residence. When interviewed by police, the boyfriend, who had suffered a cut on his lip, suggested Pearsall was enraged because she had called him from work the previous night and wanted to, quote, have phone sex. He declined, which upset Pearsall. He indicated that he and Pearsall have been living together for 3 months. She is facing a charge of battery and remains free on $500 bond.
Maybe he ain't got unlimited data. I don't know.
good God. I'm also, look, I'm just going to tell you right now, phone sex ain't it. Leave your nunnery and go and find your
carnal lust.
You know, get your man. But, like, over the phone, just like, yeah, baby, you like that?
I don't. I don't like it.
No. No, no. See, it makes you uncomfortable, right?
You think
no,
Big Daddy's
please don't.
Here for
we're
you?
I think we're going to add
see
our
what
first,
I mean? It's not worth it.
We're going to have our first bylaw in this after-show meeting today.
Well, look, we needed to understand both people's side of you. So maybe there are listeners out there that found that attractive, and I'm here to tell them, I'm sorry, I'm taken. But, yeah. So feel free, contact, what's her name again? Christina Pearsall, if you are looking for some good old PS. And with that, this wraps up the latest edition of the Oddity News. We are absolutely loving it, killing it out there on the airwaves, having so many great stories to tell. Thank you, America, because let me tell you, they do not disappoint. Clearly, if you didn't catch on, Tunny, that was another Florida woman.
This is my shock
so
face.
It shouldn't surprise you. But yes, we love hearing these stories. So if you have any stories, send them over to Tunney. Tunney, what are your social meds?
You can add PC Tunney or email me pctunney@thechairshot.com.
Yeah, you can also find me on the X. I don't know, the Twitters or whatever the hell you want to call it. X me out at Aesop Mitchell or at Dave and Cudahy. I will always listen and read. We will read these stories. But on behalf of the Oddity News Network, I'm Dave Wirtz. That is PC Tunney. Keep the news ridiculous, folks.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get packs of juicy red, green, black, or tri-color variety seedless grapes for $3.99 each. Then get tender boneless chuck roast or steaks for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Moreno is a MAGA mistake for black families. If Moreno is elected senator, he'll push to eliminate diversity, equality, and inclusion programs as part of the racist MAGA Republican Project 2025. We've come too far to let extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. MAGA Moreno is a mega mistake for Ohio. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. Paid for by WinSenate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.